From Loudvox Studios in Seattle, Washington, this is Web Talk Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm joined by Web Girl sidekick, Dana.
Thanks, Rob. Selling and buying online has been made really easy and enticing by the granddaddy of all e-commerce sites, that would be eBay. Kevin Persglov lives and breathes eBay culture as their senior communications director. Want to do a little shopping through their 16 million items for sale? Kevin tells us how, and he also answers that question, just where did Elvis go?
Well, Elvis Presley-related merchandise has always been one of the more popular categories and areas on the site. I have seen everything from used and collectible bowling shirts with Elvis Presley's image on the bowling shirt and the team name on there, to the most recent listing in which a seller suggested that they actually had a tooth, a lock of Elvis Presley's hair. I think on any given day, if you looked at eBay and just did a sample of Elvis-related items, I wouldn't be surprised if you see 12, 13, 14,000 items available on the site.
Certainly, if you're listening to this show, there is a good chance that you've been involved in creating a website. But if you have not, or want to, or are interested in using a cool new web development tool, or just curious about the current state of website development, Mark Asher is a man immersed in web authoring culture. He is a group product manager for web publishing solutions at Adobe Systems, where he is responsible for leading the Go Live product management team. Mark says that there are lots of new tools and trends to consider when designing a new website.
Some of the things that I've been looking at and that we've been seeing our users do are things that, say, break the old rigid table metaphor, things around cascading style sheets, around XSLT, which is extensible style sheet language transformation, using those models as a way to break the boundaries of that old rigid column and row metaphor that we've been using for such a long time in order to have users have a much richer experience.
It's time to go to our internet news desk for a brief summary of This Week on the Web.
Yesterday, August 15th, was the day that msblast.exe, which is the wide and fast-spreading virus that had Microsoft braced for this huge denial-of-service flood on Windows Update. My comment on this was, really, the denial-of-service attack has been going on all week, with everybody downloading the patches to fix their computer systems. Windows Update, I went through and looked at all my computers, all eight of our computers. Getting to Windows Update was a little slow and sluggish this week.
And that's just we, the consumers, desperate to download the patch. Well, one location in this country is going to be needing that patch because they're big-time internet users.
And it's, what, Honolulu, Hawaii,
yep,
of all places.
Well, they're hot on high speed. Honolulu residents are by far, according to Scarborough Research, the top-ranked broadband market. Wow! With 40% of adults using the internet in the past 30 days, doing so via ISDN, DSL, or cable modem.
It's certainly safe to say when the surf's up, they're surfing fast over there in Honolulu. What do you think?
I guess so. They want to stay connected to the mainland. San Diego came in second at 34%, and Rochester, New York, at 32%, but probably not the night that the lights went out in New York.
And the lowest bandwidth usage area in the United States is Roanoke, Virginia, which is at about 6%, and the Santa Fe, New Mexico area had about 8%, and Spokane, Washington, 9%. That's the city where I was born.
Well,
boy, I moved out of there a long time ago, back in 1966. So,
some of the really interesting bits and pieces from Scarborough's research, that Honolulu's broadband breakdown is 34% of people use cable modem, only 6% DSL. So everybody's migrating over to cable modem.
The cable modem is winning the battle over broadband right
Except now. Except in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, oddly, they have the highest proportion of DSL users there, with 18% using DSL.
Interesting. And on average across the country, about 13% of the users out there are using cable modems and about 7% DSL. So San Jose is kind of bucking the trend there a little bit.
Well, we all know about spam email, but have you ever possibly noticed that legitimate emails are also getting filtered out and you're not receiving them?
That's a big problem. That's a big problem online with a lot of the top ISPs. About 17% of legitimate permission-based emails are being blocked by the biggest ISPs out there.
They think they're doing something really good. What they call this is a false positive, kind of like pregnancy. They think it's spam. They think it's a bulk email, the ISP, so they filter it out and you don't get it.
And a lot of these are legitimate emails that people just are not getting because of the keywords that are in them.
This research was done by a company called ReturnPath, and it was interesting because they tracked the false positives that varied wildly from the different ISPs, but AOL was the big-time loser in the sense that 46% of the filtered emails were actually legitimate, not spam emails. On the other end of the spectrum, Earthlink was the most successful in only filtering out bad emails. At only 7% were possibly legitimate emails that were filtered out.
But the top honor went to Yahoo, where basically only 4% false positives were stopped.
And if you get your email through MSN, they were 10% of false positive emails. Hey, let's open up our digital mailbag, read one or two quick emails that we got from Jeff Cohn. He's from eStrategyPartners.com.
He says, great show. I thought your audience would appreciate the two community databases that we're running at www.deadcellzones.com. They're listing on this website a database of dead cell zones out there. They enable you to go in and enter the dead cell zones that you have in your area. So that should help the cell phone companies find those. And the other one is Red Light Photos, and this is a database of photo enforcement street areas. So if there's an area in your neck of the woods that's got a photo enforcement area for the street traffic, you can find it right there and you can let them know.
We want to send out a collective hey thanks to several of you who emailed us your ideas for the name for our new short-form radio bit that we talked about a few weeks ago. It'll be syndicated to about 900 stations across the U.S. We're just trying to think of a cool name, and they were all great. I particularly like several sent in from Paulie and also from Peter from Ireland. So thank you. We'll be unveiling that name pretty soon, and keep listening for details. Just a reminder that Web Talk Guys is available for on-demand listening anytime as a downloadable MP3 or a Windows Media 9 format file. That's right on our WebTalkGuys.com website. You can get it anytime and play it back on your own schedule. Want to say a quick thank you to a couple of the friends of the show that support WebTalkGuys every week. Compass Communications, a network and server colocation provider in Seattle at ccom.net. And of course, our resident funny guys over at justforyucks.com. They have a ton of cartoon and wordplay design t-shirts and mouse pads that you can't find in stores. And I love several of their shirts. The Geek Shall Inherit the Earth. Yeah, that's my shirt. Also, check out the banner ads that are top of every page of our site and click and visit them, because you'll not only support other like-minded, contextually placed ads about radio and internet radio and listening, but you'll also support Web Talk Guys by doing that.
We also receive support from paybycheck.com, and they offer an easy way to accept online check payments via your regular checking account. So we'd really appreciate if you'd support them at paybycheck.com.
Do you sometimes feel like you're the only person in the world who hasn't bought or sold anything on eBay? Well, Kevin Persglove is joining us to tell you about the fun to be had by dabbling your feet in the waters of eBay and how eBay can help you sail through these tough economic times.
Stay with us. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Come on.
Hey, Bruce, what does your t-shirt say?
Hey, take a look at this shirt.
Okay, Rubber Baby Bonker Busters. That's funny.
Oh, I just love this shirt.
I haven't seen that one before. Where in the world did you get that?
JustForYucks.com.
JustForYucks.com.
Yeah, JustForYucks.com. They have more than 250 original hilarious designs that are available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Wait, 250 tongue twister t-shirts?
Oh, you should see what they have. Cartoons, cliches, puns. They've got wordplay on all kinds of topics.
Well, what I want to know is, do they have computer t-shirts?
Oh, of course they do.
Oh, well, it sounds like JustForYucks.com has just about everything I can imagine.
Oh, they do. And they have a few things you probably couldn't imagine.
Oh, likewise.
Like professional wrestling in outer space. Uh-huh. And also the Roswell Rodeo, you know, the one featuring alien cowboys.
Oh, way cool. I like that. Do they put their designs on anything besides t-shirts and mouse pads?
JustForYucks.com. They've got coasters, pinback buttons. They've got magnets, keychains. Oh, you have to check them out.
Oh, sounds like I better check out JustForYucks.com.
Good idea.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and my name is Rob Greenley.
I'm Dana. Buying and selling online is made really easy and enticing by the granddaddy of all e-commerce sites, eBay. Kevin Persglove lives and breathes eBay culture as their senior communications director.
Want to browse through their 16 million items for sale? And have you ever wondered how eBay can help you make a little money during these tough economic times? Kevin has got an idea or two for you. Kevin, thank you for calling in to the Web Talk Guys show.
You're very welcome.
Well, everybody has heard about eBay being a great place to sell stuff and find used stuff to buy, but most people probably don't realize how diverse the eBay selection is. Why don't you give us some glimpse of how broad your database is?
I think that's true to a large degree. A lot of people simply remember eBay from its early days when there were some great stories in the national media about people cleaning out a garage or their basement or their attic or whatever and selling merchandise on eBay. But eBay now has branched much, much further out than that. As a matter of fact, there are close to 26,000 categories on eBay right now. On any given day, eBay users have a choice of 16 million listings, and eBay users will create about 2 million new listings each and every day. And those listings can be in categories as wide-ranging as some of our well-known categories, such as antiques and books and sports memorabilia and categories that were around in eBay's early days, to some of the newer categories, such as business and industrial, home furnishing, computers, and electronics.
Elvis was in the news with eBay, and why don't you tell us some of the odd things and also maybe some of the unusual large things. I think airplanes were recently available.
Well, Elvis Presley-related merchandise has always been one of the more popular categories and areas on the site. And I have seen everything from used and collectible bowling shirts with Elvis Presley's image on the bowling shirt and the team name on there, some of his very early 45 RPMs being sold on the site, to the most recent listing in which a seller suggested that they actually had a tooth and a lock of Elvis Presley's hair, as well as one of his early recordings. I think on any given day, if you looked at eBay and just did a real quick sample of Elvis-related items, I wouldn't be surprised if you see 12, 13, 14,000 items available on the site.
Certainly that's one part of what you guys are doing that's really fascinating, is that it's brought all of these items out of the woodwork that you've never would possibly conceive that somebody would want to sell. And that's another fascinating thing about what you guys are doing.
I think what it's been able to do in a lot of different ways, Rob, is to allow people who may have shared merchandise, collectibles, or a particular passion or a hobby that they had in very small areas, primarily limited to geography, to a much, much broader audience. Mm-hmm. When eBay first started back in 1995, it was not at all unusual for us to hear stories about people who were no longer limited by a region, by a town, or a municipality in terms of their trading. Now they could actually sell merchandise within their state and across state lines. As time went on, people began to sell merchandise virtually anywhere in the United States. And now it's not at all unusual for us to hear stories about people who were shipping merchandise across international boundaries. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, probably close to 10 or 12% of the merchandise bought and sold on eBay now crosses international boundaries in some way, shape, or form.
Wow, that's terrific. So are things going well? I mean, are you guys growing into those other countries rapidly?
The great thing about eBay is that despite the company's phenomenal growth and phenomenal success over these past 4 or 5 years, when we've really come to the public's attention, there's the possibility for us to grow even further because in many of the categories for which eBay is known, whether it's eBay Motors or toys and crafts, jewelry, watches, electronics, or collectibles, eBay is barely scratching maybe 2.5-2% of the overall accessible market for any of those given categories. So our ability to grow, I think, is very, very solid. And part of that is the international reach that you have referenced. eBay sellers now conduct about 37% of our business through international transactions. Wow. And so that tells us that, you know, there's a great opportunity for not only people to buy and sell within these international markets that have sprung up, but across the international boundaries as well. And there's a real opportunity for us to grow those markets. And know, you've seen some of the sites like in the United Kingdom, eBay Germany, the site we have in Seoul, Korea. All of those sites are going at very, very nice growing rates right now. And we think that, you know, in the not-too-distant future, we don't know exactly when, eBay International will actually outsell eBay U.S.
Wow. That's incredible. Kevin, I mean, without a doubt, it feels like everybody has sold one thing at one time or another on eBay. But
well, we're trying. We're getting there.
But I'm sure it's a lot, you know, the same core set of people are doing it a lot. Why don't you, for the few people out there that maybe haven't or are a little fearful of starting an eBay transaction, why don't you talk about sort of a simple process for them to do their first sale or purchase, how it works, and how you engender trust in that sales transaction?
Well, we find that most eBay users start out as buyers and slowly but surely make a transition into selling. In either case, it's pretty easy. Anybody who wants to become a registered user of eBay can do so, and generally the information that they provide to us is confirmed and ratified within a 5 or 6 hour period, generally much less than that, and that includes the assigning of a username for transactions and for identity purposes on eBay. Now, if a person wants to begin selling merchandise immediately, then we ask for a little bit additional information, including a credit card reference, so that we can do a little bit more background checking on people who are going to sell on the site for the very reasons that you have just raised. But when somebody wants to look for an item, the easiest way to do it is to simply go to the eBay search engine, enter in the item that the person is interested in, and hit the search button. So, for example, if you're an Elvis Presley person, just entering in the words Elvis Presley will lead you to, like we said before, some 12 or 13,000 items which are associated with Elvis Presley. Now, if you'd rather deal with a much broader search that may include some Elvis Presley items, then the person can search through the category. That could include collectibles or radios, phonographs, TV, telephones, periods of time, whatever. That way the buyer can search for merchandise either by the item specific or to spend time browsing through the various categories. And if a seller wants to sell merchandise on eBay, they simply have to go to the site, and as we said, they provide us with a bit more information, including a credit card number. And then they simply list the item, describe it, suggest an opening bid, how long they want that item to stay up on eBay, whether it's 3, 5, 7, or 10 days, whether or not they'll use one of the instant purchase formats, such as Buy It Now, and the type of online payment service that they'll offer, such as PayPal, which is eBay company. Hit the button, and within a matter of hours, that item is going to be available on eBay for close to 69 million users worldwide to see and possibly place a bid on.
What's fascinating about what you guys are doing is how your service has generated businesses, how people have looked at the opportunity of selling and have turned businesses, which basically is an employment opportunity. I know with the economy the way it is right now, with so many people being out of work, I'm sure that you're seeing a boom in people trying to do that.
It's kind of hard to get precise numbers, obviously, because this is information that a seller or a user would have to provide voluntarily to us. But just anecdotally, we've done some research, and we estimate that somewhere in the neighborhood of 150,000, maybe 165,000 eBay users now make a regular full-time income on eBay. Huh. And that is either as a sole proprietor or as the operator of a very small business that may employ 5 or 10 people. And that's a category or that's a group of eBay sellers that just continues to grow and grow. And that could be anywhere from people who are selling automobile and automotive parts on the site, people who are selling in the toys category, or pet supplies. So it really makes no difference which category sellers are located in. The opportunity to make a full-time income on eBay or to substantially supplement one's income is very real on eBay. Now, of course, as everybody knows who starts a business, whether it's in the online world or the offline world, it can take a lot of work, a lot of hours.
Oh, yeah, just and, like you know, any other business. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, that's certainly something that users have to think about. But, yeah, we now know that somewhere in the neighborhood of 150, maybe 160,000 eBay sellers are making a full-time living on eBay.
Wow, that's huge.
We have Kevin Persglove on the line. Kevin is eBay's Senior Communications Director, giving us the lowdown on their 16 million items for sale. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Guys Radio. I have a tip for you that will cut your inbox spam down to zero, guaranteed. The solution is a very powerful software plugin called MailWiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all my hundreds of unwanted emails and continues to do so every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. MailWiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express for Microsoft and supports multiple email accounts. Definitely stop deleting emails. Do your part to fight spam. MailWiper can be downloaded and installed in seconds and set up within a half an hour. There is no monthly fee or annual fees ever. Get your life back. Like I did. Go to MailWiper.com now and save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price. Get MailWiper now for $29.95 by visiting MailWiper.com. MailWiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee and free technical support. Remember, save 40% now off of the regular $49.95 price by going to MailWiper.com right now.
Hey, Bruce, what does your t-shirt say?
Hey, take a look at this shirt.
Okay, Rubber Baby Bonker Busters. That's funny.
Oh, I just love this shirt.
I haven't seen that one before. Where in the world did you get that?
Just4Yucks.com.
Just4Yucks.com.
Yeah, Just4Yucks.com. They have more than 250 original hilarious designs that are available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Wait, 250 tongue twister t-shirts?
Oh, you should see what they have. Cartoons, cliches, puns. They've got wordplay on all kinds of topics.
Well, what I want to know is, do they have computer t-shirts?
Oh, of course they do.
Oh, well, it sounds like justforyucks.com has just about everything I can imagine.
Oh, they do, they do. And they have a few things you probably couldn't imagine.
Oh, likewise.
Like professional wrestling in outer space.
Uh-huh.
And also the Roswell Rodeo, you know, the one featuring alien cowboys?
Oh, way cool. I like that. Do they put their designs on anything besides t-shirts and mouse pads?
Justforyucks.com. They've got coasters, pinback buttons, they've got magnets, keychains. Oh, you have to check them out.
Oh, sounds like I better check out justforyucks.com.
Good idea.
This is the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana is here.
Kevin Persglove's on the line with us, calling in from eBay, where he's the Senior Communications Director. Kevin, there are so many resources on eBay that will help sellers. You know, you can have your item placed in like more prominent areas and such. Can you give us a few tips and maybe a few upgrades or things that people can do to help sell?
Well, I think the one or two areas that we hear mostly from our sellers is to provide as much information as possible about the item for sale without overloading a potential buyer. Seller might want to have a nice, clean, crisp, short description of the item and whatever history associated with that item. And then maybe further off down in the description of area, provide additional information. And that gives them an opportunity to scan real fast and get an idea as to whether or not they're interested in the item. The other area is using photographs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our sellers tell us that people who use photographs not only get more bids, but they actually get higher amount for the merchandise that they're selling. And I think a lot of that has to do with some level of trust. When a person looks at an item, the picture associated with that item, there's a sense that the person actually has it, owns it, and has gone to the trouble of photographing it, and that adds to the trust level. Then I think the third area is being really clear on a payment or shipping policy that the seller has. The buyer knows going in what approximate shipping costs are going to be, and oftentimes they have to be approximate because of the distance that are involved in given transactions. If people can understand that, roughly going into the transaction, what the shipping costs are going to be and what type of payment service the seller will accept, those three areas tend to help sellers out a lot.
Are there any things that you would suggest that they could upgrade their, pay a little bit more, but maybe be featured prominently, something that works like that?
There of course, are a number of services that any seller can select from. All sellers, of course, will eventually pay eBay a listing fee, and if the item successfully sells, they'll pay eBay a final value fee for the item as well. But there are also a number of services that you've just referenced. For example, a seller can list their item in big, bold lettering. They can select to have the item placed on the eBay homepage, or if they want, they can have it listed in preferred placement on the various category pages. All of those give much greater exposure to the item and help the seller sell the item better.
Now, I found something interesting. You have now an eBay toolbar, which I think would make the fine art of addiction to eBay a little easier to keep a tabs on. Yeah. Explain about that and how people can get that.
We actually think about it as just a helpful little tool. I don't think we've ever actually looked upon it as an addict, tool. I think I understand the overall sense of where you're going.
It's in a good way.
Yes, it is. It is. Essentially, it allows people to download the toolbar from their desk so that the toolbar can actually be used from the desktop on their computer so that any time they are at another internet site or if they are using the computer for other means, all they have to do is click on the toolbar, which is then embedded in the lower portion of the desktop screen, and you're right back to eBay. You can either go to the eBay homepage or the My eBay launching page, depending on where you want to go. But the toolbar has become really popular, and more users are using it all the time, and it's a great way to go from any place on the internet back to eBay.
eBay is selling primarily used or semi-used type products. Are you guys moving more and more into selling brand new items?
We do a little bit of that, but I think what eBay realizes is that new in-season, out-of-box merchandise tends to have a fairly solid distribution and marketing efficiency to it. Where eBay can really add value from our perspective is looking at those areas where inefficiencies exist in a given marketplace. So, for example, where eBay will really be particularly popular is when a brand new item is first coming out, and for some reason, the item itself is going to be available before the national retailers or distributors will get a hold of the product. And this is a very short period of time, maybe a week, sometimes maybe two. The item becomes very popular, high in demand, and people go to eBay to find that item. After that first week or so, the item is generally available in large amounts through traditional retailers or distributors. And again, that's where those companies tend to do their most efficient work. 6 months down the road or 7 months down the road, when that item has fallen out of season or become to the end of its life cycle, that again is where eBay will experience a very good use for the sellers as well as the buyers who are interested in those types of items. So, for example, let's say the retailers now are getting ready for the fall season and they might start stocking jackets or new sweaters are going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that some distributors will test that merchandise on eBay in the very early stages of it. The item is in very limited supply. There's high demand for the item. It may appear on eBay for a week or so. Then eventually it finds its way into the major department stores and small retailers throughout the country. That's a very efficient marketplace for marketing the sweater or the jacket. But in another 7 or 8 months, that jacket or sweater is going to be out of season, and you're going to find it on eBay again. So it's at those double ends of the life cycle of the product that eBay feels it provides most value. And, of course, at that tail end is also the hard-to-get or collectible item.
Yeah, so actually these companies are actually using that as a testing bed to see how popular the products will be in the marketplace?
Yeah, it oftentimes works out that way. Other times it falls, to be honest with you. Some sellers who are slightly violating the terms of the agreement that they have with the distributor.
Oh, or kind of jumping the gun a little bit.
Yeah.
Certainly seems like the whole concept of community is a huge part of what you guys are doing. And could you explain your philosophy on how you guys have built this rabbit group of buyers and sellers, and how do you guys facilitate the expansion of that?
eBay has really been built by the users. Employees here at eBay consider ourselves to be stewards of a marketplace. And what we really can do is watch the buyers and sellers, watch what trends they are developing or which directions they may be moving in, and then make strategic decisions to help them buy or sell the merchandise that might be in question. So the community is really the heart of eBay. You know, the best thing that eBay can do is stay out of the way, watch what the buyers and sellers do, and then provide them with the tools that they will need to buy and sell the merchandise on our site. So I can give you a really good example. It's certainly the creation of the category now known as eBay Motors. I mean, we really just sat by and watched a group of sellers and buyers in our miscellaneous category buy and sell automobiles for a period of 4 or 5 months. And we began doing surveys of the buyers and sellers and finding out if they were truly interested in selling and buying cars on eBay, what would they need eBay to do? From that standpoint, we began providing the various tools such as on-site mechanic inspections and the escrow service and the insurance shipping and things of that nature that made the marketplace bigger and bigger and allowed it to grow. But it was really the users who came up with a really good idea to build that particular category of our marketplace.
Actually, I was interested to see, and I myself have received one of these emails, to see your advice on occasionally getting some deceptive spam or spoof emails that you think is from eBay. PayPal's fallen victim to this. And I know you have some information up on your site about how to spot those things, but could you just reiterate really briefly in our last minute, telling people if they get one of these, how they can tell if it's really eBay or not?
Yeah, the best thing to do to learn how to do this, because there's three steps that are involved in the process, is go to the eBay homepage, and then at the bottom of the homepage, click on the link that reads announcement. From there, just scroll down, and we have a category headlined, how to protect eBay users about spoof emails. And within there, we actually have two or three examples of how to identify eBay-originated emails. And the idea there is just to give them a visual ability to compare and contrast in case they do get one of these spoofs. A couple of real quick thoughts, though, is number one, the education here, I think, is paying off because I think more and more people are simply discarding the spoof emails. The second point is that eBay, as a general rule, will not ask users to supply the type of information that is contained within these emails. And I think the third point is, if a user is ever in doubt, the best way that they can check the status of their account or have the questions that they have raised, go directly to the eBay site and manually enter in the eBay URL, or, of course, PayPal, since PayPal also is dealing with this issue. Mm-hmm. So manually enter in eBay or PayPal URLs into the browser, then go directly to the site, then follow the steps through that the users can check their accounts, because we will not ask for personalized, confidential information like that in an open-ended email. And we're also trying to educate our users that should they come across the best thing to do is hit the forward button and send them off to spoof@ebay.com and let us deal with them. But again, if you go to the eBay announcement page, every week or so, we actually will update our announcements there. And it's usually under the headline, attention about spoof emails, or learn how to protect yourself against spoof emails. And within that announce board posting, we actually have examples of how someone can spot an authentic eBay URL contained within their browser.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, you're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
It was fascinating hearing about what you guys are doing, and I hope you have a great weekend.
You do the same. Thank you, and thank your listeners.
We've been speaking with Kevin Persglove. He's eBay's Senior Communications Director. Keep on streaming, because in moments we'll be joined by Mark Asher from Adobe Systems with some ideas on how to create the best website possible. You're listening to Web.Guys Radio. Hey, Bruce, what does your t-shirt say?
Hey, take a look at this shirt.
Okay, Rubber Baby Bonker Busters. That's funny.
Oh, I just love this shirt.
I haven't seen that one before. Where in the world did you get that?
Just4Yucks.com.
Just4Yucks.com.
Yeah, Just4Yucks.com. They have more than 250 original hilarious designs that are available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Wait, 250 tongue twister t-shirts?
Oh, you should see what they have. Cartoons, cliches, puns. They've got wordplay on all kinds of topics.
Well, what I want to know is, do they have computer t-shirts?
Oh, of course they do.
Oh, well, it sounds like Just4Yucks.com has just about everything I can imagine.
Oh, they do. And they have a few things you probably couldn't imagine.
Oh, likewise.
Like professional wrestling in outer space. Uh-huh. And also the Roswell Rodeo, you know, the one featuring alien cowboys?
Oh, way cool. I like that. Do they put their designs on anything besides t-shirts and mouse pads?
Just4Yucks.com? They've got coasters, pinback buttons, they've got magnets, keychains. Oh, you have to check them out.
Oh, sounds like I better check out Just4Yucks.com.
Good idea.
It's Web Talk Guys Radio. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana. We are confident that if you're listening to our show that you must have an interest in the web, and more than likely, at some point in your life, you may be working on a website or have someone build one for you, and it's important to know the tools that you'll need out there to develop a good website. There's a lot of WYSIWYG editors and a lot of software that you can purchase from Microsoft, Adobe, and Macromedia. That's why we've invited Mark Asher. He's the Group Product Manager for Web Publishing Solutions at Adobe Systems. And there he's responsible for leading the Go Live product management team.
Mark, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that's going on in website development out there. And what's the current state of that right now?
As you probably know, Rob, the last few years have witnessed the great internet build-out.
Yeah.
The last year and a half in particular, we've been sort of reeling from the results of everybody retrenching around a focus really on more productivity and more efficiency in what their current tools do and what their current websites are about, especially with the economy turning down so harshly. There's been less and less money to invest in new technology, and there have been less and less resources to implement that technology. A lot of websites have really concentrated more inward and really begun to focus on creating really great user experiences without a lot of flash and sizzle in terms of distracting videos and distracting web banners and what have you. Things that we saw, you know, back in 1999 have really taken a second seat to easy-to-use menus, easy-to-use navigation, and really helping users get to the information or the purchase or whatever they're trying to achieve by being on that website, getting to that much more quickly and easily.
So what you're saying is that usability and functionality has really kind of taken over and is really leading that whole area.
Absolutely.
So that means Jacob Nielsen has been doing his job.
That's right. The two-click rule is definitely the mantra in the near term.
Certainly in the past, it was certainly fun to have, you know, all those bells and whistles, and I think that was just a phase that the internet went through, do you think?
Probably. I remember that most web designers come from a background in graphic design from print or some other type of design background, and so their creativity is still going to be a major part of what websites are going to be about, but I think that their efforts are being refocused, and instead of being a large venue for, you know, an elaborate introductory movie, people are going to be focusing on navigation, menu items, how to clearly articulate icons for, you know, functionality. That sort of creativity is where designers are focusing.
So we're skipping the intro now, aren't we?
Literally,
you know,
yeah.
If a business thinks that people aren't hitting the skip intro link, then they're fooling themselves.
Right.
What are businesses doing with their websites now that maybe they haven't done in the past? Is there some really cutting-edge things out there, or is it just like what we've talked about, kind of just the nuts and bolts?
There are certainly going to be the lunatic fringe, as you will,
yeah,
that is still going to be pushing the envelope in terms of introducing new technologies, introducing new and elaborate ways to present content and structure on a web browser. Some of the things that I've been looking at and that we've been seeing our users do are things that, say, break the old rigid table metaphor, things around cascading style sheets, around XSLT, which is extensible style sheet language transformation, and using those models as a way to break the boundaries of that old rigid column and row metaphor that we've been using for such a long time in order to have users have a much richer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Things like providing much more dynamic presence on a website is also important. I see every day people are cobbling websites together with databases to provide users with information to allow them to interact with their accounts online, and that's only going to continue to grow. And that certainly provides a lot of the efficiency that I talked about at first, because if you can have users basically provide a self-service channel for themselves, then as an overall business, you're being much more cost-effective with your resources.
It certainly seems like that the WYSIWYG editor pattern that's been going on for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years has had its issues from the standpoint of if you really use those tools, you actually spend probably equal amount of time in the code as well as using the web editor. And I'm just wondering if the web editing tools are evolving to the point where people really don't have to get into the code to be able to make slight adjustments to their page.
I'm not sure that will ever happen, unfortunately. There's always going to be something unique about a particular company or small business or what have you about their website that requires some sort of tweaks. Either they're trying to address a certain browser, or they have a database system in place that requires a couple of hand-coded elements to be put in.
Yeah.
So what the WYSIWYG tools are doing are offering things like code completion, where if you're making adjustments to code, you can have a little menu pop up, and it'll show you what tags are you need to use for HTML or JavaScript or PHP or whatever you're using. A lot of reference material is being built into the tools as well to help users, when they're in source code, look at what tag is appropriate for what they're trying to accomplish and what different tags mean and so forth. And also just offering a combination of, for instance, split source code and layout mode. So as you make changes to the layout, you can see those code changes and vice versa. So really helping people offer, you know, a blended environment, as it were, so that if they do need to make code tweaks, they can immediately see what result it's going to happen for their user experience.
Well, Mark, tell us a little bit about what Adobe has to offer in the web authoring field.
Sure. Well, our primary offering is Go Live. That is a WYSIWYG authoring tool that is designed for creative professionals who want to build any type of website, whether they're building brand or identity websites or information-based sites, as well as dynamic sites if they're, you know, using a database as part of their web project. Go Live allows you to build all those things in a really easy and intuitive environment. In particular, most people who create web pages are using Photoshop and or Illustrator and or Acrobat as part of their content development. And Go Live is particularly optimized to help users get those files to the web quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, that's terrific.
How would you say that differs from some of your other competitors out there, like some advantages?
Sure. Well, in Macromedia's case, they offer a product called Dreamweaver MX, and that product really seems to be focused on more on the programmatic side of things than on the design side of things. Yeah. They do a great job at providing tools for working with source code, making database connections, creating either JSP, PHP, or ASP page-based pages. Those are the most common dynamic scripting languages that are out there.
Yeah.
And they really do have a superior environment for that, even more optimal if you use that on top of a Cold Fusion environment, which is their server for offering web applications. But I'd say that they probably short sheet people on the design side to some extent. So really, if you're a graphic professional who or a design professional who is using Photoshop, using Acrobat, Go Live is really the superior tool to help you incorporate those assets and lay out a website. The other comparison I usually make is to FrontPage, which is Microsoft's web authoring tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that product is really positioned as a beginner's tool. So whereas Dreamweaver and Go Live are really considered professional level tools, if you're just getting started with the web, FrontPage is a great way to start because most people are familiar with Microsoft's user interface from having used the Office tools or other products that they offer. And FrontPage really replicates that environment. It's very easy to draw out tables if you've ever built an Excel spreadsheet, you can do a table in FrontPage. But you quickly reach the learning curve end with FrontPage, especially when you want to move into things like rollovers and other JavaScript-oriented devices on a website. And that's when you really need to trade up to either Macromedia or Adobe's product.
Mark, it was great having you on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you for spending some time with us and speaking to us about your thoughts on the website development area.
Absolutely.
We've been having a conversation with Mark Asher. He's the Group Product Manager for Web Publishing Solutions at Adobe Systems. That's it for this week. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.